This is your World War III update. $10 trillion vanished. Just like that, since Trump was inaugurated, into the macroeconomic ether. Thanks to Trump's maximalist mercantile policies, the bubble got popped. Now, Trump was not solely responsible for the bubble, but he most certainly popped it in terms of what was done recently. What the outcome will be, nobody knows where the chips are going to fall, but right now people are going to feel the pinch because it's only just begun. Understand, and this is the scary thought that nobody's telling you, despite the fact that we've seen the single largest two-day losses, back-to-back day losses in history on the U.S. equities markets, trillions of dollars just evaporated, not only in the U.S. equity markets, but around the world. The European markets crashed today. The Asian markets have been crashing. Everything has been crashing, even silver, which is an industrial metal. So it is in some ways correlated with the economic downturn, although there is still a financial component of that which is holding strong. And no, that's not going to last long. The only thing holding the line is gold. Gold was down 2%, and the only reason why it was down 2% is because I believe the Chinese market was closed today, and we also had hedge funds selling, covering margin calls. So they had to sell some gold to basically cover the losses with the winners. But this is going to get worse because according to the Warren Buffett indicator, and no, it's been thoroughly debunked, Warren Buffett did not endorse Trump's tariff policy. That's a rumor circulating on the internet today. The Buffett indicator is still a couple standard deviations over the mean, meaning that we could still see a crash of 80% in a lot of these equities markets. We are nowhere close. We are still, even after this bloodbath, this historic bloodbath, we are still, and this is crazy to think, we are still above market valuations that we seen in 1929, and we are still near the dot-com bubble level of market overvaluation. Can you believe that? So we ain't seen nothing yet. And can you imagine the raucous bedlam that is going to ensue, the civil disorder that is about to take shape if this continues, if the circuit breakers can't get flipped? They almost did today. I think we were like, I don't know, just not too many percentage points away from the circuit breaker getting flipped on the stock market, but it most certainly was happening on social media. I've noticed that throughout the last couple days, particularly on X, they've been shadow banning and downranking a lot of negative market news. And this is something I discovered. Now, while this is qualitative data, anecdotal data, it nonetheless, I'm pretty confident in this, that when you look at your newsfeed on a day when the market is crashing or any crisis, because all of these centralized social medias are likely in some way, shape, or form manipulated by the NSA and three-letter agencies, kind of have veto power on how the algorithms work. And I'm pretty sure that the owners of these companies, because it's just this consortium of corporate cronies, I'm pretty sure that, you know, when they get the word, when they get the phone call from Bogdanov, they flip the switch. And so if they want to minimize negative market news, because remember how fast information can spread via social media. I mean, if you want to inflame the stock market's woes, just let social media run riot, right? And you could see the panic spread very quickly. So what I've noticed on my news feeds is that I'm seeing less negative news and I'm seeing a lot of older stories. So I think the trick that they're doing on these algorithms is quite simple. Because when you open your news feed, it's not chronological. You're not getting a real-time live continuous feed of everything that is happening. The algorithm is hand-picking the stories that it's showing you. Some are going to be new, and some are going to be old. And all they're doing is showing you the older stuff, right? When there's something crisis-related happening in the moment, they're going to show you the older stuff so that you don't freak out as much and don't sell. So it minimizes downward selling pressure. At least that's what I suspect is happening. Now, that could just be a fraction of how they mitigate this type of panic. But nonetheless, I think it is definitely a factor here. It's not only trading algorithms. It's not only market circuit breakers. It's also the social media circuit breaker that gets tripped in an attempt to try to stop the rout in these markets. It's all about perception management, you know, because if you can create the illusion that things aren't as bad as they are, there'll be less selling pressure. So you want to minimize that as much as possible. Now, we got a lot of stuff to talk about with respect to the price increases that are coming as a result of tariffs. I've done some calculations with the help of artificial intelligence to try to project exactly what we can expect with respect to price hikes in our new multipolar reality. Of course, China is responding with its own set of tariffs, which I gotta say blindsided a lot of people, because I think a lot of people, especially, you know, the Trump administration, suspected that China would capitulate and not impose unusually aggressive counter tariffs of another 34%. This, of course, signals that we are in the midst of a full-blown pre-World War III, or peri-World War III, depending on how you want to look at it, trade war. This is it. This is the trade war. It's now undeniable that it is happening. It is no longer in the hypothetical future tense. It is happening right now. And coinciding with that is the Chinese interception of a U.S. plane in the Taiwan Strait. That just happened today. Now, why is China getting so aggressive right now? You always have to look at things from a high level if you really want to understand what's going on. It's no coincidence that this market started crashing right after all of that gold was brought back to the United States. They knew, guys. They knew this was going to happen. That was proof right then and there. And that's why I made my video, part of the reason why, I should say, I made my video 6 weeks ago saying that there was a very high likelihood that it was going to start that week. Then we've seen crypto bleed off. Now we're seeing stocks bleed off. The only thing holding the line right now is gold, and oil is getting smashed, and that is intentional. OPEC opened the spigot intentionally. Why? Because I believe it's at the behest of the U.S. oligarchs in order to mitigate the upcoming explosion in price as a result of the war that is about to ensue with Iran. The pretext for a war with Iran is the nukes, but that's not the reason why they're going to war with Iran. It's West Asian dominance, and it's closely linked to what's happening with the Chinese. Everything revolves around the Chinese, United States, and MIDI. This acrimony between these two states is going to play out in numerous proxy theaters. Chief among them is going to be West Asia, which, of course, the center point of that, the center of gravity, is Iran. Now, if the United States can establish regime change, that not only opens up numerous possibilities in terms of having more ability, more leverage in their negotiations with Russia, but most certainly the Chinese, because they would effectively then control most oil out of the Middle East, which, of course, China heavily relies on. Now, as I indicated, the markets today, global equity markets, a complete and utter bloodbath across the board. Asian markets, European markets, it just kept on dropping and dropping. And it's going to get worse, as I indicated. And, of course, Trump's rather expectedly bellicose response was that this would be a perfect time to lower interest rates. Yep. No big, nothing to see here. When the market goes up, we take credit. When it goes down, it's somebody else's fault. Ain't that America nowadays? Ain't that Canada too, right? North America, we're all bundled into the same thing. Now, before I get to the details of the financial situation and what you can expect, how these tariffs are going to hit your pocketbook, let's just talk about the geostrategic situation a little bit, okay? Now, right now, we have force redeployments to the Middle East. So you have the United States moving missile defense systems from Korea to the Middle East, signaling that the priority for this point in time is protecting assets within the Middle East. Well, what would they possibly need to protect? You got B-2 bombers laying it on thick on the Houthis. Who could they possibly be getting ready to protect from? Hamas, Hezbollah, Syria, most of which have been effectively neutered, at least for the time being. The only person they could possibly be worried about in redeploying and repositioning these assets are the Iranians. Yet we're told that Trump is up for direct talks with Iran. But you see, Iran is smart. They understand that there is no condition that will be acceptable for the United States because it has nothing to do with the Iranian nuclear program in the same way that tariffs had nothing to do with fentanyl. This is just the excuse that they need in order to start a war. It's about regime change. It's about regional dominance. It's a lot to do with shared Israeli and Saudi at the end of the day, but Qatari, U.S. oil interests, economic interests within the region. It's much ado with that. But what we're seeing is a realignment of force in that direction for the sake of waging war against Iran, because it's going to be one of China's Achilles heels. Not only the closure of the Strait of Hormuz will restrict the flow of most oil that Iran is going to be able to ship out, but the Chinese get a lot of their oil from the Saudis as well. And so what this means is that you are effectively going to try to choke out China's economy. That's what we're in right now with this trade war. It's an attempt by both sides to destroy the other side's economy before destroying them kinetically with weapons. So this is the U.S.'s final opportunity. This is Thucydides' final move. The trap has been set. The United States has to interdict the rise of China before they become insurmountably powerful. NATO is preparing for war. In addition, Mark Rutte, the NATO chief, messaged young people today when he said, "You grow strong, safe, and maybe even join the military." Military mobilization will be the name of the game very soon. And of course, as economic opportunities dry up, this will be seen as a viable career path for many in Europe and the United States, increasingly more so moving into the future, especially if they can make it look cool and talk about all that cool drones and robots you're going to be able to fly, and it's going to be just like in the video games, right? In terms of the Ukrainian situation, Mark Rubio gave Russia a conditional warning today. He said that they have a matter of weeks to show seriousness about peace negotiations before things fall apart entirely. Well, again, you need to look at the global chessboard. Russia right now is in a defensive partnership with the Iranians. They don't want regime change in Iran, but they're probably okay with a limited conventional war in Iran. That would help them out because it would boost oil prices. Now, going back to a point I made earlier, why are prices crashing? Why, in the midst of a pending global recession, is OPEC opening the floodgates, opening the spigot as wide as it can go to flood the market with cheap oil And we've seen a crash in the oil price that nobody expected. Well, maybe some people did. Doomberg certainly did. Almost 15% in the last couple of days. 15% oil crash. Well, that's to mitigate and provide the United States leverage when the war with Iran begins. A friend of mine told me that before every major war, you won't really see it on a long historical timeline because it's usually quite brief, but there's a major crash in oil prices before this happens. Because they know if they close that Strait of Hormuz and war inflames in the Middle East, then the prices of oil, there's going to be a lot of pressure. Especially in a multipolar world, you're going to need even more oil to build stuff because it's everybody's going to be industrializing, right? Countries who have no industry are going to be trying to industrialize, and to do that, you need oil. It all takes energy. So, you know, multipolarity requires even more oil. Globalization is more efficient than having every country do everything for itself, right? There is a advantage in a comparative advantage in having the global specialization of nations and trading in that respect. Now, as a prepper, I can understand isolationism and the mercantilism that would attempt to try to onshore everything so that we are independent and we are self-resilient. I understand that, but that's an incremental process. So Trump, with his mercurial posture, of course, decided to just do it abruptly. Talk about an agent of chaos. He didn't create the bubble, but he popped it. Let's be real. And it's only going to get worse. So going back to Russia then, they have a matter of weeks and it's showing no signs of abating at this point in time. The war is still flaring up. Russia is still hitting Ukraine hard. And according to Rubio, he's saying that if they initiate another offensive, then we will know that they're not interested in peace. So despite what we're hearing from the Russian envoy who recently visited the United States, who's exhibiting all kinds of political niceties, these subtextual demands that are being made by Marco Rubio to the Russians clearly are a veiled threat. And we're on the precipice of war flaring up everywhere at the same time. That's day X, folks. Day X is that moment where every country involved has no other choice. It's kind of like a Mexican standoff when they draw. It's the draw. Right now, we're still in the standoff phase where, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You have China, Iran, those three theaters, the three main theaters of conflict. You know that scene where the good, the bad, and the ugly, and they're doing the Mexican standoff, and it seems like it takes forever for them to actually draw and pull the trigger? Well, the draw is the day X. We're not there yet, but things collapse quickly after the war with Iran begins. That's when it could start at any moment. According to Zelensky today, he's confirmed, 100% confirmed, no more hearsay, no more conjecture, that there's a coalition of countries which are going to be putting troops into Ukraine. Chief among them and first among them will be the French. When that's going to happen, we don't know, but apparently it's going to happen. In addition to China imposing 34% counter tariffs on the United States in one of the wildest displays of economic brinkmanship that we've seen in a long time. I mean, we really got to understand that we are living in historic times, and that cannot be understated, my friends. They also impose export controls on seven types of rare earth metals, which of course would be needed in weapons manufacturing. So these are vital for a lot of Trump's current policies that would call for not only rearmament and remobilization, but reindustrialization of the North American continent. Poland, I think I've talked about this before, but it bears repeating, They're getting ready to double the size of their army to 500,000 soldiers. And today, Prime Minister Donald Tusk announced that millions of reservists will undergo military training. That's now confirmed. It was rumor prior to this. By the end of the year, we want to have a ready-made model so that every adult man in Poland is prepared for war. Inclusion of women in training is also considered. The equal opportunity employers. Now, in terms of the U.S.-Iranian conflict, it was reported today by the UK Office of Maritime Trade that Iran is actually jamming GPS in the Strait of Hormuz. So we're already starting to see the beginnings of a kinetic exchange in that region, and it's now been admitted that the B-2 bombers are actually being used against the Houthis, and they're using some of America's best weapons in the process. The JASSM missiles are chief among those weapons that are being used. Expensive munitions being expended on what is supposed to be one of the most impoverished countries in the world, a country of 30 million people who basically fight with sandals and machine guns. Yet, of course, they are empowered by the Iranians and the IRGC and their technology. Now, according to the Telegraph, and this could just be propaganda, they're saying that the Iranian officers are starting to pull out of Yemen. I don't know if that's true. I mean, let's just, you know, consider that they're using their best weapons against the Houthis, and the Houthis are still holding out. Now, remember, the Israeli military, arguably one of the most capable because they're empowered and they have a blank check from the United States, and that's the only reason why, they couldn't even defeat Hamas in, what, 18 months? And so you got to magnify that to Yemen, which is a much bigger country. It's mountainous. They don't have full spectrum control over the situation. Yemen has shot down, what, like half of their reconnaissance drones in the fleet in the United States. Imagine what's going to be with Iran. Now, based on the expert analysis of how that's going to play out with Iran, there's so many challenges with Iran. First, you have to take out all the radars and all the air defense, okay? And even if you could do all of that, the likelihood that you're going to be able to penetrate deep into their Fordo complex where they house their nuclear centrifuges is virtually impossible. This is solid granite. So there is no compounding effects of these GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrators. The idea would be is that, okay, even though the bunker busters are not built to go down below, I don't know what it is, like 60 meters, that you could, and that's not through rock, that's just through like dirt, right? Not concrete. And this is a combination of rock and concrete. So the idea that you would basically have compounding effects, so you'd have to drop several of these things in one place, and that would soften things up, which would allow it to continuously penetrate deeper. And doing it all in a fairly short order so that the Iranians couldn't shoot down your planes, you know, I mean, this is just a pipe dream. So the only plausible avenue for defeating Iran in this respect and truncating their nuclear program would have to be some sort of assassin regimen, some sort of sabotage, asymmetrical attack, cyber attack, and they've already tried that. The Iranians have wised up since Stuxnet, so that's likely not going to happen either. But the Trump countdown to a potential strike on Iran has begun. According to inside Israeli officials, they're saying that Trump's trade war may be dominating the headlines, but it's merely a distraction. That a real war is, in fact, coming. And so it's very important to understand that when this war begins, even though the Iranians and the Russians don't have a ironclad Defensive Pact like Article 5, there still are provisions within that agreement for Russia to aid, or in the very least, abet the Iranians should they be attacked. And of course, they do have a vested interest in ensuring that regime change cannot ensue, which is why they've emboldened and empowered the Iranians with presumably S-300 and S-400 systems. Some people suspect S-500. I don't even know about that because I don't even think they're widely operational in Russia just yet. So Russia does have an economic, not just an obligation, but their existence does depend on the current regime remaining in place, because that regime is friendly. Now, you could make the argument that maybe the United States will put in a regime which would be more beneficial for Russia, and maybe that's part of the deal that is trying to be brokered. But all the temporizing we're seeing between the Russians and the Americans is solely for the purpose of trying to get the Russians' tacit approval to strike Iran, and to see whether or not they can minimize Russia's involvement in that conflict, because of course it would complicate it greatly. The United States' only option at this point, if they were smart, well, they would have never started a war with Russia. They would have unified with Russia against the Chinese. Okay, that's, yeah, but they're just stupid, you know. They're just dumb. And it's not just, I'm not saying like the people, I'm saying our leadership, you know, NATO transatlantic leadership is dumb. The hubris that characterizes every one of their maneuvers up until this point is they think they can have it all. They think they can eat their cake and have it too. They can't. They should have unified with the Russians a long time ago, and this would have been an entirely different situation. Now Russia, nor Iran, nor anybody who is on the fence will ever trust the transatlantic alliance again. Let's just keep in perspective what has happened here. In the last 5 years, we have a biowarfare agent released, which is what many people consider it to be at this point. I'm going to go out on a limb, okay, and call it that. You know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That bioweapon that was released from the Wuhan lab 5 years ago. And then you have all these subversive tactics ramping up, you know, ideological subversion in countries, TikTok being chief among the technology utilized for that purpose. Then you have NATO continuous infringement on Russia. Russia attacks Ukraine. Europe is mobilizing for war thereafter. Iran activates its Middle Eastern proxies on October 7th. The United States and Israel respond in kind, swiftly and decisively decapitating much of the Iranian proxy network, but not without a response from Iran, who starts to mobilize, okay? China then begins to encircle Taiwan. Trump then imposes tariffs on China. China then retaliates in kind. Markets crash. Oil price plummets. Gold gets repatriated. We're on the brink. We are on the brink, my friends, of something big. It wasn't Trump who blew up the bubble. He had a part in it, but it wasn't just him. I'm not deranged. I see things clearly. He just popped the bubble. Now, if you're worried about the price of gold, don't be. Gold is holding strong right now. We could see a lot more selling pressure with gold. The margin calls that are being called up by hedge funds are massive. Okay, the amount of losses, the fear, the panic, the selling right now that's happening, and that's just the paper market. You see, the thing with gold is that it's hard to sell when you have the physical stuff. It's not easy to move, and that's a good thing because we live in such a fickle market where people are making very capricious decisions on the fly, right? Oh, I got to sell. I got to panic sell. Well, what are you going to, you know, panic, take your gold down to the local pawn shop most people aren't going to do that. You're going to hodl, not because you should, but because it's too much work to go down. So a lot of that physical stuff ain't getting sold, all right? So despite this bloodbath that we've seen and people trying to cover the losses with the one winner, gold, it's only slipped a couple percentage points. And I think the Chinese markets were closed today. It was a Chinese holiday. So just wait until next week what's about to happen. And all that money that evaporated from the equities markets, that's going to be moving into the commodities very, very soon. We're about to see a commodity super cycle as societies reindustrialize. And never forget that there are still approximately 7 billion people on the planet who have yet to fully electrify. And what do you need for electricity? You need copper. You need silver. You need stuff, physical stuff. And that means that there's going to be a greater demand for those things. So I think we're going to see all of this liquidation from the markets move into commodities because it's going to be the one safe haven. Now, are people going to learn their lessons? I don't think so. I'm watching people pile into GameStop stock today because they bought Bitcoin, okay? On a day when it's the bloodiest of bloody days, the irrationality persists. So we've reached all new levels of unprecedented irrationality in the markets that I think even on the way down, even in the bottom, even after people have been completely rugged and have bled right out, they're still going to be trying to push that slot machine button because that's just how we're trained at this point in time. Peter Schiff made a very interesting statement. If we import less stuff from abroad because the prices go way up and we can't afford it, the money that we use to send abroad stays here. And what does that money do? Well, it bids up the prices of what's here without all the goods coming in. So domestically, we have more money chasing fewer goods, and that puts upward pressure on prices, goods, and services. So domestic money supply means more of our inflation stays here. We don't export it. You export less dollars. Well, those dollars got to come home. It's part of the reason why the dollar is crashing, by the way. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have the petrodollar. Speaking of the petrodollar, U.S. Future oil projects are basically going to be non-existent if oil prices stay at 60, which is why they won't, all right? Because Trump's whole thing is to be one of the economic energy powers of the world. And so the only way you can do that if oil prices are at a certain level. Older wells that are already established and already profitable, they can be profitable about $30 a barrel. But new builds, they need at least $70 oil to be profitable. In Canada, I think it's like $83 a barrel. So, the only people benefiting right now are the Russians and the Saudis, arguably. And in order for Saudi to cover all its debts and its domestic obligations, it requires prices of around $70 and above as well. So it's not just that they have a large margin, but they still have all of these obligations that they have to fulfill. The semiconductor bubble has popped. Semiconductor sector in the United States has plummeted 38% since its July peak. And the funny thing is that retail investors are piling into U.S. stocks as the market crashes, believing that you got to buy the dip. What do they say when there's blood in the streets? Buy, buy, buy. When people are fearful, be greedy. Be greedy when they're fearful. Yeah, but it's so hard to discern what's greed and what's fear, right? Buffett still isn't buying, at least not as far as we know. When Buffett starts buying, and this is the thing, even though Buffett shows consistent returns, when people are in that irrational, exuberant state, it doesn't matter. They throw shade at Buffett. Oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Bitcoin's going to go to 1 million. Blah, blah, blah. But now he's a genius. He's being revered as a genius once again. I've been saying that all along. It's the Oracle of Omaha, man. The guy lives in a, what, like a 4,000 square foot house or something? He's not living too high on the hog. He's a humble man for the most part. But who knows? Maybe he's got some, like, Illuminati chamber that goes down and opens up to, like, a 100,000 square foot lavish palace or something. Who knows? He could afford it if he wanted to. Now, in terms of what is going to be the outcome of these tariffs, well, it's a little bit difficult to calculate because just because the tariff is 34% doesn't mean that the price of the goods is going to increase 34%. But as Peter Schiff just said, it's going to be compounded by the fact that there's more and more dollars chasing fewer and fewer goods, right? Which is why you should gear up right now if you want anything. I mean, I'm pulling the strings on a few things that I know are going to be in short supply and high demand very, very soon. But that's another story. The problem is that they're talking about wholesale cost and manufactured cost. So if something, say, costs $200, like that's not the retail value. You can sell it at whatever you want for retail. Let's say the wholesale cost is $200. So you import it at that $200. The 34% will be charged on that. So that's going to be $70 or $68, right? So when, let's say that product typically would retail, because you got the middleman, you got shipping, you got logistics and distribution and all that stuff. So typically that $200 product, you'd sell it, let's just say, for $400, right? It's a, you know, 100%. I mean, that's a big markup, but let's just say to keep it simple. So if you were to have to pay an additional $64 on the tariff, that $64 when, if you were to fully pass that on to the consumer, which it's arguable that companies are not going to do that, they're going to eat some of that cost, which of course is going to be a contracting economic force unto itself. It's only going to equal, in that example, about a 17% increase in actual retail price. But that doesn't factor in the fact that fewer and fewer goods for more and more dollars chasing those goods. And I would say that the margin on most prices, stuff that you bring in, like when I make an order from China, it's going to usually, you know, the margins are going to be, from China, it's a little bit better. But if you were to import something from, I don't know, let's just say it was, if I was to import something from the United States to resell here in Canada, usually the margins around 35-40%. Like they're very slim. And in some cases, the same holds true with China once you factor in all the shipping and the duties and taxes and all this stuff. So what I'm saying is, it's likely it's not going to be a one-to-one. Like you're not going to see an immediate 34% increase on the price of sneakers, but it's going to be a high. You're going to be paying a lot more for stuff. And because we've already seen 5 years of rampant inflation and inflation that's not accurately reported and reflected in the way that they measure it, we all know it's much worse than what it is. And because inflation is still rising and because now people's 401ks and their equities holdings are contracting by the minute, in addition to that, you're going to have increased prices of stuff. So everybody's going to be told to, you know, pull up your bootstraps and knuckle down. And so are people just going to naturally buy less stuff? Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. And so you might have some demand destruction in that respect. But it's still like we're going to be in stagflationary times. This has stagflation written all over it. So estimated price breakdowns based on artificial intelligence calculations for electronics, you're possibly looking at price increases of 40 to 50%. This is something that historically has been very deflationary. Technological deflation is what has masked a lot of the true inflation. You know, the TVs just kept on getting cheaper and the memory and the computing processing power just kept on getting cheaper. Well, not anymore, especially if China does Taiwan, then all bets are off. We're going back to the Stone Ages. Apparel and footwear, 35 to 45% off. Automobile parts and automobiles, 15 to 25%. Did I say 35% off? That's wishful thinking. The opposite. You know what I mean? 15 to 25% increases. Fresh produce, because a lot of that is domestically produced. Now, you often get this statistics float around that 80% of the stuff we consume is domestic, but that's energy, that's food, that's like building supplies. That's not a lot of the stuff that people, you know, need, the products, you know, that people buy. A lot of that, most of that shit comes from overseas. Yes, 80% of all commodities are, you know, raw materials, energy, all that stuff is engineered domestically. But that's not what is going to be, you know, that's not what people are going to see when they go to the store, put it that way. So food, you're only looking at another 15% price increase. Furniture and home goods, 35 to 45% price increase. Toys and recreational goods, up to 40 to 50% price increase. Pharmaceuticals, 20 to 30% price increase, which is why you need to go and capitalize on Jace Medical before they raise their prices. Jace is the best. They were the original subscription-based, I don't know if they're subscription-based, but the online, you know, prescription medication service. So go and go through the link in the description if you want to support the channel. Overall housing impact is about 3,000 to 5,000 a year per household. Now that's assuming you're going to buy stuff. Okay. You might just not buy stuff. And maybe that's what we need. You know, in this society of conspicuous consumption, maybe we need a little break and we need a reminder of what is really valuable. It looks like that's all the time I have left today. I hope you guys have a great weekend. We got a lot of content coming your way. It's just a never-ending conveyor belt of information because there is so much to learn. Go check out our video that we did yesterday with city prepping. We got another one coming up with Charmingly Frugal, who's another YouTube prepper, a female prepper. We need more female preppers on the channel. Too many old gray-haired geezers on the channel. So we're going to be switching it up a little bit, guys. Take care. Thanks for watching. Canadian Prepper out.